No one ever got the better of her in midfield. She always got on top and controlled.
Anybody that sees her ability to deal with adversity, spectacular.
Whatever adversity you face in life, there's always a way to bring yourself back and move forward in your life. And I think she has that in spades.
Chloe Mustaki, Republic of Ireland International. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, I might take you back to the very beginning. So you were born in America. Your father is French and your mother is Irish. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I come from quite a diverse multicultural background, which I think has stood to me to this day. So yeah, my parents met postgrad in the US. They moved back over to Europe. They wanted to be closer to home and around family. So yeah, we first moved over to Paris, lived there for a couple of years, and then unfortunately my parents got divorced and my mum came back. And yeah, I guess Ireland has been primarily my home since then.
She would have felt everything, not just from her own individual, if you like, selfish perspective, but she would have also felt it, what the people she loved were experiencing at the time. And that's hard on young shoulders, but the unfortunate reality is that one in two relationships or marriages will break down in our lifetime.
And how was that to navigate as a young girl, that your parents are divorced and you have to travel between two different countries?
Yeah, actually it was quite difficult, I'm not going to lie. I mean, because my parents got divorced at such a young age, I became quite attached to obviously my mum. She was obviously my everything back in Ireland. And then my dad, I mean, his life fell apart, I suppose, when my mum took us away, inverted commas, from him. So, I mean, there were times where I refused to get on the plane to go see him. And that's not because I feared spending time with him or I didn't have love for him. But like when you're 4, 5, 6 years of age, you don't really understand why these things are happening. So I know that that broke my dad in two. So it was difficult for everyone involved, but I have such a good relationship with my dad now and hopefully many more years of experiences to come with him.
I felt a little bit of maybe sadness or guilt that I had been a part of this breakup and that the children had no part in it. So I needed to make sure that their lives, insofar as I could, didn't suffer any more than they had, and that, you know, we would just build this new life together, but very much keep her dad and her French family in the picture.
I owe my mum so much, really. Like, you know, when she moved back over to Ireland, she was starting her life all over again with two young kids. Of course, she had help from family here, but, you know, it's just, yeah, difficult when you've lived away from Ireland for 20 plus years and you come back with two young kids and she was working full time and trying to give us the best life that she could.
And then football came into your life. So tell us a little bit about that.
I have an older brother. He's 5 years older. So we used to kick about in the street outside the house. I used to play with him and his mates. And yeah, I don't know, I grew a love for the sport.
She would do her homework or whatever. She would go out on the street and look for other kids to play football. And they were always boys. So she would kick a football around and they were kind of impressed with her skill, even at that young age. So she was always very much in demand, you know, when there was a team being picked from the local neighbourhood.
I actually played for Park Celtic, our local club in Camatili Park, from the age of about 6. And I played there as the only girl in the club until I left when I was 14 years of age.
The first time I ever met Chloe, she was playing with my son's team. I think they were about under 8. And the thing that struck me, I remember early on, I had never seen somebody that age bend a ball, and she did on her left foot straight away, and I went, she's pretty special. One particular manager shouted, don't hold hands with her, tackle her. And the young boy hit her fairly hard in the tackle, and this was coming towards her last year. And I think very legitimately, 5 minutes later, she put that player and the ball into touch and then stood in front of the manager for a second, and the point was very clearly made. I had said to one coach, I reckon that she would be our first full international, and she was.
So at the time, there was that, you know, that rule where girls couldn't play past the age of 14.
We were thinking, you know, we've got to find a way around this. At the time, Joey's was within our neighbourhood, and she tried out for Joey's, and happily she was of a level that they had one or two girls teams at that point, and they were starting to develop the girls game.
So yeah, I spent, as I said, kind of the first 7 or 8 years playing there, and then I decided at the age of about 14, as I mentioned, that it would be good to probably switch over and play with just an all-girls team. So this is when I moved to St. Joseph's here. Great to be kind of involved only with girls. I think at that point it was important for me, I guess, more in terms of the context of my gender, just to be around other females and grow within the sport there.
Well, I think Chloe was playing for a girls team in Joe's, and a friend of mine was coaching them, so he brought it to my attention, you know, about her ability and potential. Well, she was still a kid, you know, but still good. You could see she had potential and a good attitude, you know.
And then at the age of 16, the Women's National League came about. So I was just about eligible age-wise. And actually, initially, Joey's were going to have a team in the Women's National League in that first year, but last minute they pulled out. It was a bit of a scramble then for a few of us as to kind of what we would do. Would we stay playing for Joey's, or would we try and find a Women's National League team that would take us on so close to the start of the season? So luckily, a few of us managed to get in at Piemont. So that's who I played with in the first year of the league. And I'm pretty sure we won at that league in the first season. So it was an amazing experience as a kind of 16-year-old playing with such, you know, seasoned professionals, or amateurs, I presume you could say. But you know, some of the big players like Karen Duggan, Louise Quinn, Sarah Lawler, Stephanie Roach, you know, those were the big names when I was only just 16 years of age. So it was just, yeah, it was amazing to be able to play with them from the get-go.
And do you think growing up playing on the boys' team, it helped develop you as a player?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a major boost in terms of probably more so just skill, level of skill. I think it takes a bit longer for girls who maybe opt to just play around girls and not with boys. So for sure, I think it definitely helped me and propelled me in the early stages of my career.
And you just see that commitment, that non-stop commitment, always wanting to improve.
And when the Women's National League came about, so that was an opportunity. Did you see opportunities before that? Did you think to yourself, okay, I can go on here and maybe play at a high level? Was any of that going through your mind when you were playing when you were younger?
Yeah, well, I first played for the Irish team at the age of 13, actually. So I played with the under 15 schools team for 2 years, and then, you know, on to the 17s, and then on to the under 19s.
Because when we started playing matches and training, you could see that she was never dominant. She always got on top in games. She always controlled games, even at a young age, and was very, very open to being coached. The team that she was on, that I was coaching her on, would have had Katie McCabe on it, so the Irish captain, and a lot of other girls who played youth international with, went on to play youth with Chloe and Katie at 17s and 19s level, and played at National League club level here.
And the under 19 Ireland team, you were the captain. It was an incredible team. It was the first team to qualify for the UEFA Championships in 2014. So an exciting time in your life. And it quickly turned into probably one of the scariest and challenging times in your life. In the semi-final of that competition, you were taken off because you had no energy, but you later realised that it was because you had cancer.
Yeah, we're actually coming into 10 years from that, as you mentioned. It's Whoa. Kind of bringing back a lot of memories, good and bad. I think, you know, hard to understand at the time when I was away playing at the European finals what was going on in my body, but I think any athlete can attest to the fact that, you know, sometimes you just feel quite tired, you're training hard, and, you know, it was kind of a tough few weeks leading into that finals, you know, we were getting pushed physically to kind of prepare us for what was to come. And I just thought at the time, you know, that I had probably overdone it, or I just needed, you know, a bit of a rest coming home from these finals. But yeah, it quickly transpired that actually had Hodgkin's lymphoma, and things were a lot more serious than I thought. So yeah, I'm definitely kind of still living with that experience, and always will.
I remember going over to Oslo and watching her play and thinking, there's not, you know, she's just off by a small margin. You know, what is it? And I remember saying to the team doc, I mean, we all stayed in the same hotel, and I remember saying to the team doc at the time, how do you think Chloe's doing? She was saying, you know, why do you ask? And I said, well, you know, she's just kind of maybe holding back a little or something. And she said, oh, she's fine. She's just a little overawed by everything. And I guess as a mom who'd seen her develop and play and grow and knowing what this meant to her, it just didn't sit right with me.
So Chloe, you were diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And for people that don't know, what type of cancer is that?
Yeah, so it falls within the category of blood-related cancers. So I suppose similar enough to leukemia, well, in that bracket, I suppose. So yeah, it happens within your lymph nodes around your body. So yeah, I had 6-centimeter tumor in my chest. And usually for people who have any form of lymphoma, they might feel a lump or a bump under their armpits or in their neck. But the problem was mine was in my chest. So we actually didn't realize for quite a while that obviously something was going on. I was so lucky. I came home from the finals and I went to my GP to renew a prescription. And he was, you know, keen to kind of just keep an eye on my general health, took bloods as he probably would once or twice a year. And yeah, called me the next day and said, you know, something's come up. I'd like you to come in for another set of bloods. And yeah, then he sent me for a chest x-ray and everything went pretty quickly from there. So yeah, big shock to the system.
It was still a very scary time for her and for us. Because we didn't know what we were heading into. You know, you can always tell, you can do the research and find out what the statistics are, but you know, you never want your child to be the one that didn't make it. And there are kids that don't make it.
Can you take us back to when you first heard and who was with you at that time and what that was like as a 19-year-old to hear that news and to comprehend it all?
Yeah, so given it was about 10 years ago, there's not a whole lot I vividly remember from those kind of 2 weeks, but there are moments in time where I can like vividly remember where I was standing or where I was seated. So I remember I was doing some kind of part-time work with my mum in her office when that first phone call came from my GP to say, you know, something had come up. And yeah, I mean, at that point, I didn't think it'd be anything near serious as cancer. So I remember that day quite vividly. And then I remember sitting in the GP room with my mum, you know, following the second set of blood results and him explaining, you know, I think this is potentially what we could be dealing with and stuff. So I have certain moments over that kind of 2 to 3 week period where that final diagnosis came where I can vividly remember myself also crying, bawling my eyes out at the kitchen table. Yeah, some very difficult moments over those couple of weeks. But as I've said previously, I was surrounded by amazing friends and family that got me through that very worrying time.
Yeah, her mum told me, I had texted her when she played for the under-19s and said, hey, I thought you did great, well done, proud of you. And straight away, classic Chloe text back, I played very poorly. And I went, no, you didn't, you did great. And then I met Dee Dee a couple of weeks later and she told me what the diagnosis was. And I was shocked. I mean, it was just the for any cancer diagnosis, particularly somebody that is young, the unfairness, the absolute unfairness of it.
And what is going through your head at that point in terms of, I suppose, you're thinking of football and life and all that, or can you even think of that? Is that so small at that point that you're actually just thinking, I just need to get myself better?
Yeah, I was trying to understand how this could happen. I mean, I was 2 weeks previously, I was playing in a European semi-final, and then now here I was being diagnosed with, you know, stage 2B Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I was trying to understand, how was this possible? Firstly, trying to wrap my head around it as a 19-year-old. So, God, I didn't really think much further than that. I was just trying to get treatment, or, you know, get things going as soon as possible. So that was kind of at the forefront of my mind. Okay, what's the next step? But I wasn't really thinking much else, really. I mean, I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to take the year out of college, that I needed to kind of step away from competitive football. Everything became very insignificant at that point in my life.
And the next step was treatment. Was it chemotherapy?
Yeah. So I think within a few weeks of that initial conversation with my GP, I started my first round of chemotherapy in St. James's Hospital. They took such good care of me. So I'd come in as an outpatient once every 2 weeks, spend the guts of a day there getting chemotherapy via IV method. And yeah, I would go home that evening. And, you know, in the first few sessions, I felt fine. Obviously, I came into the treatment as a relatively healthy, fit 19-year-old, and that stood to me. But then as the sessions grew on, I began to feel a lot more ill after them. Nausea was a big issue for me. And then obviously the loss of hair.
That was devastating. It was probably the most devastating personal aspect for her. They had said she'd go through one or two sessions and then she might be combing her hair, and she might suddenly take the brush or the comb and see something that would upset her. And I remember the first time that happened, just the devastation in her eyes when she saw her big strand of hair come out. And, you know, we just hugged and said, you know, it's hair, Chloe, it's hair, you know, it's not you, it's hair. And we'll get through it. We'll find, you know, the longest, most beautiful, blonde hair wig, most realistic that we can.
A lot of the time for women, you know, your hair is like your security blanket, and it's obviously a big part of how we look. What was that like to go through that at such a young age?
Yeah, I think for me that was definitely the hardest aspect of it all. You know, as you mentioned, when I was that age, like, I really cherished my hair at the time. And I just knew how difficult that was going to be for me. So, I mean, when I went and got my head shaved, I brought one of my best friends with me, and we both just cried through it. So that's also an experience that will live with me forever. So, yeah, so, so difficult. I well up now when I think about it. But, yeah, it was tough, but I got through it somehow. And, you know, when I went back to playing football, I even managed to do that without a wig. So you grow from those experiences, and yeah, I think I'm definitely stronger now.
A lot of people, like we say, don't make it. A lot of people don't get a second chance. Chloe got a second chance in life, and she got a second chance in sport. But she fought for both. And there were, you know, there were dark days. There were times when nothing, you know, it just didn't seem to be bright ahead. But we just keep on going, live in the moment, the cliche, day by day.
So you got back playing football. It was about a year after, and you're out on the pitch. And obviously you're looking to maybe get back into the Ireland squad. Is that in the forefront of your mind at that point?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I got back feeling myself playing well, you know, a year on from the start of my treatment, yeah, of course. I mean, I was ambitious. I wanted to grow as a player and to get back to my best. And then, like other girls who were in that under-19s team, the likes of Katie McCabe and Claire Shine, who had kind of broken into the senior setup, I wanted to do that also. So I knew it would take time. I needed to be kind to my body. But for sure, at that point, definitely I was setting my sights on a senior cap.
And then you get the call from Vera Pau to come up to the senior team. This is in 2019. You're due to make your debut or get your first cap against Greece. Well, that was the talk of 2020. And in the training before that game, the day before, you do your ACL.
Vera called me up kind of late 2019, I think it was. And just such a sense of relief to finally have an opportunity to come in and be amongst the senior team. I had waited such a long time for that moment. And at the time, I was working crazy hours over in London and I was playing part-time for Charlton. So it was a really, really hectic time for me. Flew home in March 2020, just as COVID was kicking off. I was kind of doing well, was hoping to get some minutes maybe in that game versus Greece. And yeah, match day minus one, just went in for a tackle in Johnstown where we were staying. And that was that.
They were flying out the next morning. And the afternoon, I got a phone call. Mom, can you come and pick me up? And I just stopped in my tracks and I said, what? Can you come and pick me up? I've done my ACL. And I thought to myself, I didn't hear this. Was I imagining what I just heard? I didn't hear this. She said, no, Mom. Please come and pick me up. I've done my ACL.
I mean, it made perfect sense in the grand scheme of things, in the context of how I was living my life. As I said, I was, you know, getting up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. I was working, I was traveling on the tube, working 9 to 6. I was traveling on the tube for another hour to get over to Charlton. I was there for 2.5 hours between gym, pitch. I was getting the tube back home. I was getting into bed like close to midnight and I was doing that all over again, 4 times a week. So I think it was only a matter of time that something had to give. And yeah, unfortunately, it was my ACL.
And then you come back from your injury and you're playing with Shelburne.
Yeah. So I got back playing with Shells, which was great. They were really helpful as well in terms of my comeback. So yeah, I got back playing in August 2021. God, that was such a relief. It took me quite a while to get back on the pitch. I struggled with some patella pain, which was quite common. That was a massive relief. And I just had support from the whole footballing community as well once again. So it was great to get back playing. And yeah, I guess then my sights were set on kind of getting back into the international setup at that point.
Which really took, I suppose, the better part of a year for her to come back out through that. But no better woman, you know, no better woman. It's a project. It's an assignment. It's one more mountain to climb. And that's the way she has overcome all these various challenges that she's faced in her life.
So when you get that call to come back into the squad, and I was there on the night when you got your first cap in Sweden. It was an incredible moment. What was that like?
I was just so proud of myself for, you know, putting in the hard work over those 18 months when I was out. And then also over those past kind of 7 months, building myself back up to my best. It was a really proud moment for me. And not only because what I had been through in the past couple of years, but what I had been through, with the chemotherapy treatment 7 or 8 years previously. So it was a long time coming and I really did wait quite a number of years for that moment, but it was everything that I hoped it would be.
Losing those few years here and there, there are other people who are reaching their prime and coming into positions and, you know, you wonder will I be able to regain my spot? Have I missed my window because of these setbacks? So when she did get back into training with the Irish squad, it was really fantastic. It was really fantastic. I was so thrilled for her.
So a really good job, a well-paid job. And then you decide that, no, don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to half my salary and I want to become a professional footballer.
I had been through education. I had ticked off the undergrad. I had ticked off a master's. I had ticked off a couple of years of work experience, you know, with a very good firm. I had saved up a little bit of money. And at that point, you know, the world of women's football was exploding, you know, a few years ago. You know, I had managed to break into the senior squad, which I knew would help me in terms of any potential full-time move. And I just thought I deserved it. I owed it to myself to try and go full-time, even just for a few years, to have no regrets later in life for all the sacrifices that I'd made, for all the hard work that I put in to coming back from, you know, the chemotherapy treatment, the ACL. I just felt, why not, Chloe? You know what I mean? So I decided to get an agent to kind of explore opportunities that were over in the UK. And yeah, it just kind of fell into place come summer of 2022. And I got an offer from Bristol City in the Championship, who were doing or had done well in the years previously, had come down from the WSL and had ambitions of going back up there. So yeah, it just felt right. And, you know, it was a good time to just kind of take a hiatus, as I put it, from my normal life and go and have some fun.
I bumped into her and we're walking, and her decision point was go to Bristol. I think that she had to go for a professional contract to make Australia. So the choice was give up the job that she was in and go, which would be a lot lower salary, a lot lower wage, go to Bristol. And she was just saying to me, what do you think? And I went, it's a no-brainer, it's a World Cup. Like, you know, you got to go for it.
She'd spent all of her career in Ireland pretty much, except for when she was, if you like, double jobbing in London, working by day and doing semi-professional in the evening. But now with Bristol, she was fully professional. She was going to park her HR financial career for a while and just see what she could make of it.
And going full time with Bristol City, it obviously put you in a great place to hopefully make that 2023 World Cup squad with the Republic of Ireland. And thankfully, it worked out.
I went full time in July 2022. And then, was it 5 months later, we ended up qualifying for a World Cup. So, yeah, the timing was really great for me. But then you fast forward 6 weeks later after qualifying, and I get diagnosed with what they call osteitis pubis, or basically pubic bone edema, from basically an overload to the area. So then I'm looking at a number of months out, you know, heading into the last few games ahead of the World Cup. And then I'm thinking, God, what luck do I have? You know what I mean? Like, I've sacrificed a lot. I've given up the full-time job. I've gone pro. I'm a part of a team that qualifies for a World Cup, and I may not even be able to fight for my place. So that was also a really difficult run-in to the 2023 World Cup, in the sense that I didn't know until very close to the pre-camp whether or not I would be available even for selection. So yeah, really, really difficult few months. But again, probably goes to show that I just, yeah, pretty good discipline, pretty good resilience. And I just did everything I could to get myself back available for selection. I just wanted to be available for that pre-camp. Whether or not I would get selected, I wouldn't be too harsh on myself, but I just wanted to put myself in a position where I could be selected. If I wasn't good enough, I knew that I'd have tried everything to be on that plane. Yeah, in the end, I got there, which is amazing. And I'm so grateful for the experience. I do remember just crying. I think for me, it was like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I could not believe it. I mean, 4 months previously, I, you know, was crying still probably in a physio room in Bristol because, you know, we just couldn't figure out how to get me back on my feet. And then here I was going to Australia I don't know, I just couldn't believe it, and I just felt such a sense of relief that I could actually just breathe again.
I particularly remember the game before the World Cup, before the squad was announced. She came on and in the second half and put in a really good stint, and you know, really performed well, and I think that got her the decision to go to Australia. So it's like I said, she always meets the challenge, Chloe. You know?
For me, it's recognition, but her journey had already been fantastic. I mean, anybody that sees her, her ability to deal with adversity, spectacular.
Fantastic. I mean, it was her dream of a lifetime. It was mine as a parent. I was going to see her basically achieve her highest honour.
And how were the 3 or 4 weeks being out there, being at a World Cup, everything?
Really surreal. I mean, to see the excitement over women's football over there is unbelievable. I mean, like, it's really something growing up that I never thought would happen. I think that was probably the most exciting part of it all, is just seeing the hype around the game. And then, yeah, to be a part of the opening game as well, like, what an amazing experience and an added benefit to the whole thing. So, yeah, they really put on a show over there for us.
It is such a positive way of looking at things, because I'm sure as a competitive athlete playing at that level, you want to be out there. Was there part of you that had to deal with that as well, that you didn't get to feature in the World Cup?
Yeah, of course. You know, you're training just as hard as everyone else is training, if not harder, obviously, because you're not playing. So you're making up the graft then and match day plus one and stuff. So it is hard. And, you know, you have family and others who are supporting you, coming to games, hoping to see you on the pitch. It's something that you have to deal with, not only at international level, but at club level as well. So it was difficult, but it just is the way it is. And as I said, like, the fact that I even made that plane and that squad of 23 is beyond what I could have imagined 5 or 6 months previous to that. So I just needed to be content with what ended up being just kind of a squad player. And yeah, hope for more in the future.
Because that final game, I think even here at home, everybody thought that maybe some of the girls that hadn't got a chance, that might be their chance, and it's maybe the right thing to do. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, I personally obviously think that there could have been a little bit more rotation come the third game. But look, I don't hold any anger towards anyone for that. As I said, from a personal perspective, I can still say I went to a World Cup, and through all the life challenges that came my way ahead of that World Cup, I can just feel satisfied with having been there. So at the end of the day, you just need to keep perspective, and that's what I try and do going forward.
You obviously have such a massive love for the game. You love being out there, you love playing, showing your talent, the performances you put in. You know, it's clear to see, is that what it is for you? It's getting out there, it's being free on the pitch. You just love it?
Yeah, I just love the feeling that I get from just being out on that pitch and forgetting everything else that's going on in the world. I think it's one of the greatest forms of escapism, sport, to just being able to forget all the other worries that are going on in your life. And yeah, and it's obviously just great for your body as well from a physical perspective. So I mean, as an athlete, I love feeling fit and healthy. And I think through the past number of years, it's been more about proving it to myself that I'm capable of playing at a high level, more than actually feeling that thrill of playing at a high level, if I can get that out in the right way. I mean, I never had any ambitions of playing for Chelsea, playing for Barcelona. I just felt that I deserved to be playing at a senior level because of everything that I had sacrificed and everything that I've been through over the number of years. So, you know, it's just about being happy, feeling free, feeling fulfilled. So, yeah, hopefully I can reach that stage both on the pitch and off the pitch whenever I decide to walk away from pro football.
Chloe, Allianz have an amazing campaign at the moment for young boys and girls in primary schools to stop the drop. And what it is essentially is to stop them dropping out of sport at such a young age. How important is that to have sport in your life at a young age? And what advice would you give to young kids to continue playing and to enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's all about just getting that physical side benefit to playing sport. So it doesn't have to be at a very serious level. It's all about just enjoying it, exerting your body for overall general health. So, and also on top of that, for me, like, I have met some amazing people through sport, friends for life, through discipline, through friendship for life, through a healthy body, a healthy mind. I would really encourage young females to just keep it up, not even to a high level if it's not what you want. Just keep showing up, keep getting out there, keep playing it for the love of the game more than anything, and see where that may take you, because there are so many opportunities for females in sport right now, and that's only going to continue to grow. So for anyone who is thinking, you know, is it possible for me to earn a living? It absolutely is possible. So yeah, just don't give up and keep working hard.
Chloe, from where you came from, starting out with a boys team, to now seeing the meteoric rise of the women's game. We see the amount of people that have came out for the World Cup, you know, having over 80,000 people at the first game against Australia in Australia is incredible to see. We see that the viewership is up, the visibility, the media coverage, everything is heightened to a new level. Can you just explain what it was like for you growing up to now seeing what is happening?
Yeah, it's quite phenomenal, quite unbelievable, to be honest, especially in the past, I would say, kind of 3 to 5 years. That's when it's really taken off. As I say, when I was growing up, I mean, the idea of going full time, it just wasn't a reality. And so, like, for so much to change in such a short space of time, it only kind of leaves me more excited as to what's to come, not only for women's football, but for women's sport in general.
Well, it's made a huge impact. The fact that they got to the World Cup, but even before that, the fact that they were starting to promote the games much more, to get crowds there, live games on TV, and I think that's really helped.
Walking up to the women's international game against England to see the size of the crowd was just spectacular. And to see that all of the time. And also, I think people are finally understanding, I think GAA led some of the way with women's football. Soccer has led the way quite a lot. Is it making sure the game suits, that if don't play it the way boys play it. Let them play the way that they want to play it, in the manner in which they want to play it.
Women's football has just really come into its own. But it still has a ways to go. Because, you know, there's nowhere... She would not, her earning, having given up her, if you like, off the pitch career, pro tem, she would not be earning anything like her male equivalents would be earning. And that's a disappointment. But it will come. It will come.
It's really exciting. And I can't wait for the future, to be honest, for hopefully my future daughter being able to, you know, earn a really good living in whatever sport potentially she may choose, if that's a route that she wants to go down. So yeah, it's amazingly exciting, and I'm just so grateful, I guess, to have been a part of that growth. Even if it's towards the end of my career, I'm still so grateful to have experienced a degree of it, because it does feel like a nice reward after all the sacrifices in my youth.
Chloe Mustaki, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.